Welcome to False Flag Weekly News, the weekly news show that's so darn skeptical that we think that those cookies that are supposedly eaten up by Santa Claus on Christmas morning were an inside job. I'm Kevin Durrett with Jeremy Roth Cashel. Actually, we probably don't really do much Christmas here, but we're in the spirit anyway, because, hey, we've got some glad tidings to bring to you. We're not going to inflict that on you, but I think we're still a few dollars short of our goal for this week. So if people could contribute by way of fundraising up there somewhere for this week, I would really appreciate it. And then we won't sing you Christmas songs, which would be pretty cruel and unusual. We have great tidings, and starting with Trump is ordering U.S. troops out of Syria. I think this is good news. It's not like going to save the world or anything, but Trump rediscovering his inner America first character may really make the world more interesting in certain respects, and perhaps there will be a little bit less killing. I don't know. What do you think, Jeremy?
I'm suspicious. I wish I could just trust that this was a what we might call a do no harm foreign policy, i.e. a non-interventionist foreign policy. But there's obviously already intervention, and so this is a sort of abandon the ship in some way, because it looks that Trump told Netanyahu before he didn't tell Congress, but he told Netanyahu was told on Monday apparently that this was going to happen. And so I am worried once again about the abandonment of the Kurds by the U.S. government. It happens over and over again, and I am concerned that this actually comes out not out of America first interest, but compromise operations and foreign elements that Trump is actually probably compromised by, which might include aspects of Israel, Turkey, Russia.
Well, I don't think Israel is particularly happy about this, though, are they?
I think so. It was a murmur. Of course, they're sort of publicly there. Some of their representatives are publicly saying, oh, we told you Trump would abandon. But if you go back many years, even in like the Hill, more than 2 years ago, there was public articles talking about handing over Israel's primary security over to the east and towards Russia. And so I believe that this is probably one of the first steps towards that public reckoning of shifting it over to Russia. And so far, we haven't seen any indicators from Russia that they are going to stand up for Palestinian solidarity in relationship to Israeli incursion. So I don't necessarily think that that's going to be a good thing.
Well, Moon of Alabama had an interesting analysis of this that was, very qualified optimism. And I think it was quite a bit more sophisticated than the Fox News analysis, which was basically just jumping up and down with Trump and cheering, hey, we beat ISIS, we beat ISIS. would you agree with me, Jeremy, that Moon of Alabama is a better source than Fox?
Definitely more nuanced than Fox, but also some blind spots like Fox, I would say, too, that doesn't deal with what's actually going on behind the scenes in relationship to this increasing conjunction between Israel and Russia. And yes, of course, we see like on the surface, Russia votes against Israel sometimes in the UN, but in terms of realpolitik, in terms of what Russia actually does when Israel, for example, shoots down its plane, or when Israel is, for example, staging false flag terror attacks in the United States or incursions into Gaza, it's very, very clear what this relationship between Putin and Netanyahu represents. And so the Moons of Alabama, I don't feel, grapple with the obvious facts pointing in that direction.
And of course, there may have been a quid pro quo with Turkey, which is announcing that it's buying the U.S. Patriot missile system, and maybe in place of those Russian missiles, who knows? Do you think that this was really the backstory here?
It looks like that, and this may be related to the sort of the Khashoggi incident And Turkey had some compromise in many ways on the not only the Saudis, but also on the White House and Kushner and Trump. If you go into the depths of that, as we'll see later on, in terms of very similarly the way that Bush CIA supplied Khomeini when he came in with lists of political targets, leftists and students, assassination lists, really, it looks like the Trump White House, including Kushner, supplied lists from top secret briefings from the United States intelligence community to MBS in relationship to his political targets that ended up, obviously getting people killed. So yes, and I think it does look like that Trump is sort of clearing out of the way so that Turkey can run rampant on the Kurds. That's some of this. And then yes, there's this trade-off that now Turkey won't just buy the S-400s, which I believe are a longer range missile, but they'll also potentially buy these Patriot missiles and be allowed access to those, which are more mid-range missiles. And so we'll see where if Turkey can sort of play this middle role as a sort of Russian aligned NATO member. We'll see how that goes.
Well, if indeed Moon of Alabama is correct and Russia's position is that Syria will be taking back all of its territory, there certainly will be a major difference between the Turkish and Russian positions. We'll see where that leads. And let's see. Hey, that's right. We had a new piece by Gordon Duff arguing that actually here the Turks are about to be betrayed and that this is all being orchestrated by John Bolton, who is owned by Sheldon Adelson and the Likudniks of Israel, and that they're the ones who are actually behind this, as well as by the throwing Mattis out, the Trump withdrawal from Syria with making an apparent deal with Turkey. But then Turkey, according to Duff, is going to get stabbed in the back. And interestingly, he quotes Gwyneth Todd, former National Security Council person who has advised Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, the in charge of the Fifth Fleet in Bahrain, and many other high-level folks. She was just on my radio show last week. She takes a slightly more benign view of Trump than Gordon does. She thinks Trump really does have these kind of non-interventionist instincts. So who's right here, Gordon Duff or Gwyneth Todd?
Well, they might both be right in that Trump himself does have non-interventionist instincts. He's pretty much driven by his own self-interest, it looks like. And so it would make sense that he wouldn't be interested in, helping other people out through military involvement in that way. But it's also the case that he is easily guided. And this does look like something like a Bolton operation. And we do need to look back at the background of Bolton. Greg McCarron and I on The Antidote did a in-depth background research on Bolton in relationship to his background with the Gatestone Institute and JINSA, the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, that has been put in the center of the 9/11 Manhattan operation by veterans today. And it should be pointed out, I went back and looked at a very early on Gordon Duff interview with a apparent high-level national security insider, journalism insider in D.C., who said that there were two people who had basically stood down the plan to attack Iran back in 2006, which Gwyneth Todd herself was actually a key part of disrupting too, from the diplomatic angle in Bahrain. And the two people were Molofsky, Marine Colonel Molofsky, and General Mattis. Molofsky apparently was the real hero who stood down a lot of this neocon aggression and apparent potential treason. And Mattis was part of backing that up. So what irony we've talked about before, that a credibly accused war criminal like Mattis, in terms of the immoral and illegal operations in Iraq, and not to mention the ongoing cover-up of 9/11 treason, would be the credible moderate peacenik in the house.
Yeah, Mattis probably isn't totally on our team, although both Gordon Duff and Gwyneth Todd think he's far from the worst out there. But Trump, if he is indeed suddenly turning America first, he may be pulling out of Afghanistan almost as quickly as out of Syria. Apparently, there's an announcement to pull out half of the 14,000 U.S. troops currently in Afghanistan, and the rest to shortly, supposedly to leverage the Taliban into negotiations. But of course, it's the opposite. It will leverage them into not giving an inch. So we'll see another thing in which the forces supported by the U.S. are ignominiously overrun by the patriotic defenders of that country. I'm actually happy about this, Jeremy. Trump dumped more than 5,000 bombs on Afghanistan last year, more than any other year. Just stopping that process of bombing the people of a country who are brave enough to defend their country from invasion is something to celebrate.
Yes, but of course, that Trump dropped those 5,000 bombs, which is the most of any year of the Afghanistan war, in order to supposedly, as diplomatic, as the stick in their diplomatic relations with the Taliban. And I would just point out that Greg and I have also been tracing this long history here of the corporatization of the military-industrial complex. And as we saw Trump come in, we saw who he was naming, the closeness with Eric Prince, of course, the infamous founder of Blackwater. But then he also named Steve Feinberg to the head of his intelligence advisory committee, Steve Feinberg being the head of Cerberus Capital that bought DynCorp. And so I think what you really begin to see here is, I actually just last night, I looked it up on Military Times, there was an article titled, Mattis is out, Blackwater is back. And Blackwater's gone through a whole multiple versions of its name. I guess it's Constellis. It's Beyond Academy now. And they ran a full-page ad in the January 2019 issue of Recoil talking about We Are Coming. So people need to look into that aspect of this. This may not just be a pullout of militarization, but a corporatization, basically, and putting it in the hands of these kind of global mob networks that people like Eric Prince are obviously associated with. So I would tell people to go look at the people that Trump has named to his intelligence advisory board, which includes Steve Feinberg, who, by the way, worked at Drexel Burnham Lambert, the infamous Michael Milken company that people like Nigel Farage, the key Brexiteer, also worked at. But also look at Samantha Ravitch, who he's recently named in the last months to it. And she was a key aide to Cheney, worked for the so-called Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, really a front for Israeli intelligence, and Washington Institute for Near East Policy. So that's who this policy is being put in the hands of, I believe. There's the corporatized elite rather than the constitutional, even if war criminal, U.S. military. So I'm very
such a great victory for the forces aligned against the so-called New World Order. But we did have a little bit of an anti-New World Order victory as a big brouhaha broke out about Alice Walker admitting that she's a huge fan of David Icke. She says that Icke's book, And the Truth Shall Set, is quote unquote a curious person's dream come true. This is quite interesting news because Alice Walker is so canonical in the American literary canon. You have to read her probably starting in high school and then again in college. She's the first thing you'll ever read in literary course. And here's the most anti-mainstream guy you could ever imagine, David Icke, on at the top of her reading list. I love it. What do you think, Jeremy?
I definitely think it's a very interesting moment. I'm glad that people have been, opened up to this on the pages of the New York Times. Yes, there's the perpetual issues with David Icke and the reptilian issue, the shape-shifting reptiles, and whether that's the turd in the punch bowl or whatever. But really, when you look at his actual work, like, for example, his book Tales from the Time Loop, my lone David Icke book that I bought back in 2005 or 6 or something, you look on page 112 and, okay, it says familiar faces. It was Ashkenazi ancestors of the Khazar people who were behind the Clean Break document produced for Benjamin Netanyahu in 96 that called for Israel to, quote, shape its strategic environment, starting with the removal of Saddam Hussein and the installation of a Hashemite monarchy in Baghdad with Iraq brought under Jordan Hashemite influence. Jordan and Turkey would form an axis along Israel to weaken and roll back Syria. I mean, so obviously, like, okay, you can put aside all of the reptilian shapeshifters, but there are historical facts in his work that people who are interested in reality should really look into. And Alice Walker is also right in that there's a spiritual dimension to some of David Icke's work that is really about the human spiritual sovereignty and dignity in the face of these forces of wickedness.
Indeed. Well, this New York Times piece includes some lies, such as, quote, the idea that a race of reptilian humanoids, widely viewed as a stand-in for Jews, is secretly running the world, and it to the idea that Icke's talk about reptilians is widely viewed as a stand-in for Jews. And the link is to this John Ronson's making fun of the idiots in Vancouver who were crazy and paranoid enough to think that because Icke was talking, he must be talking about Jews. So that link actually demolishes the argument that it was supposed to support. And that's just one example of how these people are so factually challenged. Another is that they talk about Alice Walker saying that the Talmud is poison and so on. But they don't actually discuss the facts about what is or isn't in the Talmud. And Michael Hoffman has put out a piece going over that. So once again, in these issues, we should be looking for truth and sourcing our assertions in a free and fair discussion and debate. And obviously, the mainstream is totally unready to do that. They will not debate any of these things.
No. And if you go look at like the write-ups from even some of the more specifically Jewish media, like the Tablet, it's, you know, just massive hand-wringing about, oh, we all knew how to separate the artists from the anti-Semitism for many years. But when it really comes down to it, we need to have these conversations about factuality. What is the reality about what the Talmud says? I don't know. I don't know how to read Hebrew. So I'd like to see these things discussed more and more out in the open, like things about World War II history, all of that. We need to be able to discuss these issues rather than sort of one-line dismissals that link to so-called factual basis that is actually the opposite, like you've said. And I would just really point out that on the surface, if you really want to talk about this problem of anti-Semitic conspiracy theories and why people would be concerned about it causing potential violence, on the surface, once again, the most violent anti-Semitic conspiracy theory of the 21st century is September 11th and the view that all of these mainstream rags endorse. That is the one that has led to the destruction of millions of Semitic peoples. And that needs to be the one that needs to be skewered, as it's already gone massively violent.
Well, let's move on to another story about a brave woman of color standing up against the forces of Sensia Amali, who filed suit in Texas alleging a violation of her free speech rights under the First Amendment because she's fired from her job as a speech pathologist for not signing an anti-BDS oath. The idea that people working for schools in America have to sign oaths of law, this is absurd. But we'll see what the courts have to say about this, I guess.
Yeah, this is the United States of America. We're not supposed to be forced to sign loyalty oaths to our own government, let alone a foreign government. Let alone a foreign government that's involved in decades of false flag terrorism, decades of ethnic cleansing and long-term occupation. And the other thing is that this actually does point to the real America in many ways. If whether you look at the once again, women leading the way on in terms of actually the defense of the Constitution, not the special forces guys running around the world taking treasonous war criminal orders, avoiding their actual oath to defend the Constitution. No, it's people like this a Muslim speech pathologist or the Mennonite Christian math teacher here in Kansas who pushed back against these state laws. But now they're going to go federal with it. They're trying to slip it into this last minute budget bill and go federal on it. I would say that people backing this, including the senators leading the way on this, this is obviously some type of seditious push to that's the definition of sedition, to undermine the basic rules and laws of the country. And I would say this is probably in service of an even higher treasonous agenda, which is pushing to so that we cannot even speak in public about such things as the national security and the national interest, such as who did September 11th and why, and who needs to be indicted and be tried for it. Kevin, can you hear?
My internet has been very bad today. It's freezing up a little bit, but this censorship by the Zionists is, of course, happening here with that Senate bill you mentioned. It's happening in the UK. I just interviewed Gilad Atzmon, who was going to play with the Blockheads, Ian Drury's old band, for their anthem Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, which I remember sort of enjoying before I came to Islam. But anyway, Gilad's playing with Pink Floyd. He's playing with all these big names, but they think they can ban him because they don't like what he has to say. They can ban him from playing saxophone. That's completely insane. So no wonder the New York Times, as we see in the next slide, is noticing that this is getting out of control, this editorializing in the New York Times about curbing free speech on behalf of helping Israel. This is happening all over the world, and it's backfiring. It's making people more and more angry with the Zionists.
Yes, I mean, here you go, the New York Times editorial board just being basically a little bit moderate in terms of maybe you shouldn't attack the core fundamental free speech, free thought principles of the country if you're concerned with convincing people that you are a good actor in the world speaking to Israel. And this is, people are beginning to wake up in the United States of America about this gulf that is really opening up in relationship to this Netanyahu government in Israel that's been, making its way to being more and more exposed as a violent and corrupt actor for decades now. And the Jewish American community is more and more, as we'll see later on, getting sick to its stomach in relationship to this this corrupt relationship.
Censorship is often counterproductive. Again, it makes people angry. It publicizes whatever the censors are trying to suppress. The deplatforming of dissident voices has the same kind of effect. It looks like Gab, which was being suppressed recently, is now over a million subscribers or handles. I think the fight for free speech will continue. We need to move a little faster because we're a third of the way through with half the time left. So as you said, Jeremy, even Jewish donors to Israel these days want to vomit at a lot of what's coming out of Israel. And I thought this Richard Silverstein article about Eric Goldstein, who's head of the UJA, United Jewish Appeal Federation of New York, he's basically a fundraiser for Israel, was almost suicidally candid in saying that, all the Israel donors in America are reaching the point of feeling like they want to vomit. So again, Jeremy, I think that this overreach by the Zionists is coming back to bite them.
Yeah, and this is the UJA, which is a long-term backer of Israel. And so this is a very interesting moment now, and we've been seeing it on a lot of different fronts, but even this Natalie Portman brouhaha, where she's speaking out more, but she rejected accepting the Genesis, sort of so-called Jewish Nobel Peace Prize, because she didn't want to be on stage with Netanyahu. And of course, that prize's money is backed by the Russian Jewish oligarchs that are behind the Alpha Bank, which is the key institution that was obviously in some way communicating with Trump servers during the campaign. And some of these guys are very much some type of intelligence assets of both the Russian and Israeli governments. So this is also coming up in relationship to what's been maybe falsely termed Russiagate, I think, is this increasingly blatant relationship between the highest levels of the Israeli government and organized crime and Russian oligarchs.
Well, if you want more reasons for Israel to make you vomit, how about having their top leadership calling for killing all Palestinians? You know, isn't the whole point of Israel to stand up against genocide? Its whole rationale and its legitimization comes from the Holocaust is what makes it okay for us having a Jewish state where all the Jews cross the oceans, exterminate the local population, and create a safe haven for themselves. Wait a minute. What if exterminating the local population, that's not a good way to fight genocide. I wonder the American Jews are vomiting.
Exactly. At this point, when you see these kind of high-level government officials saying these kinds of things, then something like an actual total approach like boycott, divestment, sanctions that includes aspects of the academy, even though I also understand people's hesitance to stop dialogue in relationship to intellectual freedom. But when you have it like this, where it's the high level officials of the government calling for these kind of crimes and this kind of criminal discourse, it seems that like there needs to be a total cultural strategy here to deal with this. And this is strategic affairs minister. These are the people who work on Israel's image, maybe covertly, all around the world. They're core to the whole Al Jazeera film that exposed the lobby here in the United States of America targeting activists. And it's also Avi Dichter, who's making these kinds of noises, the former head of the Israeli FBI. So this is very, very bad.
Indeed. And still more reasons for Israel to make us vomit. How about the Jeffrey Epstein affair, which is found in the Miami Herald, although not too many other mainstream outlets? Epstein, of course, is widely suspected of using his status as a leading pedophile pimp to accumulate blackmail material on behalf of Israel. And again, once I don't think most American Jews are too happy about this guy's activities either.
No. And this is good. This is continuing to be covered. People should also go look at the journalistic work that Wayne Madsen has been doing for a year that goes into the background of the Katie Johnston story, the woman who was suing Trump and Epstein in the run-up to the election about an alleged rape in the early 90s, but then also this girl, Maria, from Watertown, I got the name wrong, in Connecticut, where she went missing in the 90s at this very same time. And as you pointed out, too, they're in the background here of this Epstein scenario is not only organized Jewish crime networks, but also the deep Jewish state, we might call it, in the background here. Ghislaine Maxwell, his main partner in crime, apparently, who would recruit girls. She was the daughter of Robert Maxwell, the famed, infamous Israeli spy, also worked with the KGB. And I just got the book from the library in Kansas City, Robert Maxwell, Israel's Super Spy. And it looked like that Maxwell was working with elements of Mossad and elements of KGB to overthrow Gorbachev in trade for releasing. And then it says in the book, expelling Soviet Jews so that they would have nowhere to go but Israel. And so this isn't the background behind these compromise operations, even beyond the obvious immorality and sadistic behavior here is global national security affairs.
Well, yet another reason for American patriots to Israel is the betrayal of American national security. It's been an ongoing thing for decades. They get U.S. military technology secrets, and America's enemies used to be Russia. Now it's even more China, apparently. And this guy, Tom Rogan, who's a very widely viewed Washington, is apparently leading the pushback.
Yeah, this is basically conservative, maybe even verging on neoconservative magazine, which is showing that even this closeness between Israel and China that has been amping up for decades and has gone from covert to very overt is even worrying some of the what we might call the Israel second neocons, as Greg and I have talked about it, this actual split in the neocons, and that those that are more interested. Go for it, Ken.
Oh, yeah, the port project at Haifa that Israel turned over to China may be a bridge too far for some of these folks.
Yes. Oh, and there's an interesting article by John Swin at Securing Our Interests that goes into the longer history of the background of these diplomatic relationships between Israel and China from the late 70s, where it was trying to be kept a lot more covert, to now where there are headlines such as Netanyahu wants to marry Israel's technology to Chinese capacity. And as we'll see sooner, some of that Chinese capacity is from Uyghur concentration work camps, apparently, re-education.
Right. Well, more news from Israel. The chief Palestinian negotiator's description of meeting with Kushner makes it clear that, hey, there's nothing to negotiate. Kushner is representing the extreme Likudnik faction that demands Palestinian, not just Palestinian surrender, not just surrender of the nearly 2 billion who view Jerusalem al-Quds as essentially a Muslim city, which it has been ever since Islam existed practically, but 3+ billion Christians out there who have at least as much right to the Holy Land as the maybe 5 to 10 million religious.
This is very obvious that this so-called peace deal of the century is really once again another Trump crime family mobster deal. Do you want the lead or the silver? There's not going to be any negotiating about terms. Do you want us to pull the entire plug and allow Israel to basically massacre Gaza? Or do you want us to give you some cyber breadcrumbs and allow Palestinian people to offer cheap labor for Israeli security firms and in industrial interests? That's what it looks like. And of course, Kushner is completely compromised too, as he was said to be in MBS's back pocket. And of course, this is runs all the way into the center of the Trump administration, formerly to Michael Flynn, who was on the board as an advisor of the NSO, Unit A200 Israeli cyber weapons firm that apparently was involved in the Khashoggi affair. And it looks like Kevin is frozen. So there is a some pushback at the University of California by all of the chancellors condemning the boycott of Israel as a direct serious threat to academic freedom. This is an Al Jamaaner, Shiri Moshe. She wrote a hit piece on Professor Anthony Hall during his University of Lethbridge affair. And so it's coming from that angle. And their point is that they believe that it's causing a intellectual freezing on campus to have all this push for boycott, divestment, sanctions. And as I said before, I am open to the possibility that things like cultural or academic or artistic boycotts are not necessarily productive. But I think that the idea here is to provoke a conversation, and that's what really needs to happen, is these kinds of things should provoke more conversation rather than shut them down. And then last thing I would say is that the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement should really begin to start shifting its focus from the artistic and cultural boycotts, which are important in terms of global discourse when artists and musicians refuse to play concerts in Israel, it makes a very big statement. But to the things that can unite across the large portions of the population and the political spectrum, which are things like economics and national security, and looking into this problem of the Talpiot program, the backdooring of the world's databases and technology devices as we head into a world, an internet of things that is much and more obviously being directed in many ways out of technology hubs in Israel. And so that, I think, should become more and more the focus, and that can allow us to reach out not just to the sort of lefties and the peaceniks and the artists and the musicians, but to the hard-nosed security, national security types, and show them that this is, even if you think that like China and Russia are the big problems, the backdoor conduit now and back decades for U.S. Security and technology interests has been Israel. So, and moving on. Oh, there's this allegation that MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, is plotting a Camp David-style handshake with Netanyahu. They're hoping to give their big photo op like this were the early 90s or something. And this is supposed to help MBS with the Khashoggi fallout. And what I did not realize, and this article, I believe, connects to an article backing this up, is that it was MBS that supposedly was the one that asked Netanyahu to attack Gaza just back a few weeks ago to throw up a little bit of a cloud to both obscure and distract from the Khashoggi controversy. So this Saudi official who was basically has taken the fall for the Khashoggi affair, he was making secret visits to Israel around technology, it looks. And this refers back to that company that I referenced before, NSO, that I believe makes Pegasus software. Michael Flynn sat on the board. And this official, Ahmed al-Asiri, is known to have put together basically paramilitary assassination groups in conjunction with certain private military contractors, it looks like, in terms of the West. And he was at these key meetings early on in the Trump administration, even before, during the transition, with people like Joel Zemel, the Israeli businessman who started Psy Group, in Israeli intelligence connected, but backed by banks in Cyprus, connected to certain Russian oligarchical circles, that was proposing doing additional information warfare on behalf of the Trump campaign. So these guys were all at meetings together. Prince al-Asiri, George Nader, the convicted pedophile who's been in the center of all of this, and Michael Flynn. So I would say MAGA, hopefully it stands for not only my advisor got arrested, my attorney got arrested, but my ass got arrested. So the next article is about this idea of that Mueller is dropping the Russia probe and says Trump is working for Israel and the Saudis. And what I would say is that I don't believe he's dropping the Russia probe. It doesn't look like that. It looks like he's expanding it. And the hope is that he's actually getting to some of these other actors that, just like in September 11th, I would assert, where you have these sort of front men who were not involved. Certain Saudi aspects were involved in relationship to at least running the idea of the hijacker cover operation. But in the background, of course, is the Israeli so-called national security apparatus and their global Zionist and neoconservative political networks, most especially in Washington, D.C. So we will see where this heads. And of course, Flynn. A lot is made of Flynn's payment by the Russian government for attending the RT gala 10-year anniversary, where he sat next to Putin at the table with Jill Stein. But more importantly, in the background were Russian oligarchs, Russian Jewish oligarchs like Viktor Vekselberg, who is front and center to a lot of these networks and was actually was basically interviewed by the FBI when he came into the country. But Flynn also had this Turkish connection. He was operating on behalf of Innovo BV, and two of the guys he was working with have now been indicted for their being unannounced foreign agents. But as I pointed out last time, was on False Flag Weekly News. In the background, even there, again, is Israel. Not only the NSO company that he was on the board of advisors of, but the Ratio Energy, Israeli energy interests. And even the very beginning of the Mueller probe, people like George Papadopoulos, the sort of what he was known as the coffee boy, but he was on Trump's national security advisor team, and he was actually being looked at by Mueller as an Israeli agent, not a Russian agent, which is actually very, very likely the case here. So we might actually want to call this Mobgate, global organized criminal interest, but there is a very strong Israeli-Russia axis that also runs through Arab countries like Saudi Arabia and the UAE. So this is an interesting article in Wired that runs down, this is a complete guide to all of the 17 known Trump and Russia investigations. And like we just talked about, some of these point in the direction directly of this so-called going global aspect of the Mueller investigation, where it's actually being to point directly at the heart of Middle East power in Israel and Saudi Arabia. And this author, Garrett Graff, he wrote a book that is basically the only known, maybe sanctioned biography of Mueller. It's an interesting book. In the background, I would say, of Mueller's interest, and yes, there's all of the different cover-ups that he's obviously been involved in, whether it's 9/11, the anthrax attacks, I believe also Lockerbie, all of that. In the background, there is someone who has been very interested in going after organized crime, where even in this book by Garrett Graff, it talks about the Mogilevich network. And the FBI, under Mueller, I believe, had started this the Budapest Project, which was specifically targeting these networks of Russian organized crime. And like I forgot to mention before, in terms of Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, Robert Maxwell was a key business partner of Semyon Mogilevich, which I think hints at the what this is actually about, an organized crime investigation that ties together Israel, Russia, and the United States.
Okay, Jeremy. Well, hey, I don't think I'm gonna prevent me from talking about this stuff because you know more about it than I do. So which story number are we on here?
We're on 25, this Wired complete guide to all known Russia Trump investigations. But now we're moving on.
Ah, right. So, summary at Wired was pretty interesting. You really have to work hard to keep track of all of these investigations. But whether any of them are actually going to bring there would be any improvements if Pence were in his place, I suppose there might be from the viewpoint of those who want to attack Iran, because Pence is more gung-ho on that than even Trump is.
Well, my hope is that Pence is implicated in this too, as Pence was apparently put in by Manafort, who's up to his neck in this and is obviously going to prison. And so Pence might be implicated in this too. Kushner, I believe, is implicated in this. And so that is some of the hope here in the background. And I would just point out that Flynn, the one of the main prosecutors who's been basically handling the Flynn case, is a young Pakistani-American Muslim woman called Zainab Ahmad, who's the most successful DOJ prosecutor on actual Article 3 civilian courts, open discovery process in relationship to things like the leaking of documents to ISIS or actual Al-Qaeda members. Yes, that's a part of the 9/11 cover-up, but I would point out that she came on in a big way the justice seam at the very same time as the Obama administration was seeking to actually try the alleged 9/11 mastermind, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, in Lower Manhattan, which would have been an incredible coup for 9/11 truth, both in terms of the open discovery process and people who could have weighed in there, but also the direct activists. And then that was shut down by all of the normal suspects. So there's this deep, deep irony, a sort of karmic irony, that Michael Flynn, who wrote his book with Michael Ledeen, the key neoconservative Zionist, basically a foreign agent. Ledeen put Pollard in his place in naval intelligence to leak out the documents to Israel all the way to Soviet Union. That Michael Flynn, who talks about the cancer of Islam, or at the heart of Islam, or however he wants to talk about it, is being held to account in a manner of justice by a young Pakistani-American Muslim lawyer.
Okay. Well, what was Flynn actually saying about the death of Igor Sargun, the director of Russia's GRU military intelligence unit, allegedly in Lebanon, which is not the official story. The official story, I think, is he died in Russia, isn't it?
Yes. And I get what they released. Mueller was forced to release the FBI interview of Flynn, and Flynn was saying he'd been in contact with GRU elements in giving them condolences for the death of Igor Sargun, and he said in Lebanon, and the official line is that he was died of basically a heart attack or something in FSB medical headquarters. And it turns out he's the second chief of GRU to die in about 2 years, so a dangerous position, obviously.
I guess so. And speaking of dangerous positions, being the Trier connection may be one of those. Michael Cohen got himself in trouble through that, among other things. And Kushner then took over, apparently, the in-app scandalous material about Trump and never publish it if it's scandalous enough to mess with his operations. It looks now like maybe the Inquirer is having to distance itself from Trump. It's been a rah-rah Trump cheerleading rag for the past few years.
Well, these are the two high-level executives that are being involved with the Trump investigation at the New York State level, which is Weisselberg, who was, I believe, the CFO at the Trump Organization, and then Pecker at AMI. And we should remind people also that Pecker apparently has a vault of all of the squash stories, which I bet includes things that involve things like Katie Johnson and Maria and Epstein and all of that, and probably who knows what about things like sexual trafficking, but also so AMI, after the anthrax attacks, remember the anthrax attacks targeted the National Enquirer offices, that who came in to get the BioDefense or BioShield contract to clean it up was one Rudy Giuliani. Kevin, I can't hear you.
Yeah, sorry. Froze up on me. I've got terrible internet service today, and before next week, I hope. So we have the focus on Mueller going after African Americans and so on and so forth. So we're still getting this Russian interference in the election through Facebook meddling narrative, and then we have the DC Attorney General suing Facebook over its these kinds of activities with Cambridge. So Mark Zuckerberg once again is still in the hot seat.
Yes, and I would point out about the targeting of Mueller is that some of the storylines that were being put out by these Russian disinformation teams, as can be documented, are narratives that line up very much with the so-called alternative and right-wing independent media, such as Alex Jones. There were things about like how Mueller was very similar to what you heard during the Obama administration from these same circles, that he was some type of Muslim Brotherhood sleeper, that Mueller was involved with Muslim radicals, and then also targeting African Americans not to vote. But yes, at the core of this information warfare campaign that was not directed by Russians, but was directed by people like Robert Mercer, and people like Steve Bannon out of Cambridge Analytica, is Facebook data, which was leaked out by a Russian neurocybernetic scientist called Kogan, who since has renamed himself Dr. Spectre. And he comes from a long line. His grandfather was honored in Russia as a key grandfather of neurocybernetics, and this idea of, you know, controlling people's mind through data warfare. So there, this Russian angle of it, whether it's talked about as non-linear warfare, hybrid warfare, the Gerasimov so-called doctrine, this is a very key piece of this, but it's also not the only piece of it, just like Saudi Arabia is not the whole piece of 9/11. And I would point out too that Facebook in its background did another story out of the New York Times was that there was a cutout created for the big tech giants in relationship to Facebook data, which is that they're being sued for, really. And but one of the key ones that they created a cutout for was Yandex, the Russian Google. And there is Yuri Milner, big Russian deep state money way back in Facebook history. So I think we should look at it at some aspects of Facebook is not only a deep state weapon of certain elements of the West, but also aspects of active measures too.
Okay, well, final Trump scandal for the day is the Kavanaugh affair, revisiting that through this article at Vanity Fair, the culture of the good old boys and girls at this high-level Catholic prep school where they're still trying to keep their mouths shut about all these holes. What do you think, Jeremy?
Yes, the omerta goes beyond just the Jewish and Italian organized crime circles, I guess. It makes its way even into good Catholic boy schools here. And I think just this article points that there's a lot of deeper stuff even going on that is being under cover of silence. And I also would say that it hints that the allegations against Kavanaugh that were being weaponized by so many of the so-called independent alt-right media were very likely true. And Greg and I went into some of the background of Kavanaugh's father, who he worked with Estee Lauder on the board of the Cosmetics Association. And there's also organized crime link to the Justice Kennedy's father, who basically resigned in order to give Kavanaugh his seat, basically chose Kavanaugh. And Kennedy's son was at the Deutsche Bank in the key position to start giving Donald Trump the hundreds of millions, if not $1 billion, of very likely washed organized crime money to prop him back up.
What a well-connected prep school. I sometimes wonder if the world isn't really, certainly a lot of empires draw on them in the same way that, you know, Skull and Bones out of Yale has provided so many CIA drug dealers and skullduggery mongers. Well, how about this crime of empire? Research now shows that the British stole $45 trillion from India during the colonial period.
And if Rudy Giuliani were talking about this, he would basically say, "It's just a small crime." And this is very blatant about the background of the looting of the rest of the world in relationship to empire, and specifically the British Empire. And to me, it actually, the core of this is that basically the British Empire looted India to the tune of $45 trillion in a very similar fashion to the way that the dollar hegemony and the organized Federal Reserve cartel, weaponized treasonous currency cartel, is done today, where paper is printed in exchange for actual hard goods, such as precious metals or actual manufactured goods. And in this article shows that certain aspects of Indian living standards went way down in the early 20th century. And so, yeah, this is very, very telling, and I think we should learn some of the lessons that actually tell us what's continuing to go on now under this very similar type of strategy. So, a little piece of ray of hope here in relationship to aspects of our justice system is that it has now been found by a jury that an ex-Blackwater mercenary was guilty of a murder in the assault on at least 14 dead civilians, including children, including a young aspiring woman doctor. And so this is I'm concerned that these are the organizations that are going to be then empowered by the Trump withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan in Syria, is the reinsertion of these kind of people. But at least one of them has been held to account by our justice system. Kevin, can you hear?
Yes, I can hear you more or less. So Moving on to the China Rising category, it looks like the withdrawal of official U.S. military from the empire, as you say, Jeremy, may not be an entirely good thing if Blackwater is replacing them. Other entities that are US, perhaps China, will be moving into the power vacuum. And we have this fight between the Five Eyes, the Anglosphere's spy chiefs, and Huawei out of China over the issue of who's going to dominate the next generation of military technology.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to aspects of the technology in the West and the internet itself, even that it obviously comes out of aspects of the national security apparatus. So obviously, Huawei has a deep connection, if it's not actually in a full asset of Chinese intelligence. But this also then points to the importance, really, globally, of we the people really deciding where we want to go with this whole technology question and who we want to be in charge of our own digital identities, our own data, our own technology. And I would propose the two main areas where we need to get together and work on it in a very active and rapid fashion are a political program, not only in the United States of America, but also more internationally, and then an actual technology program. So anybody who's interested in beginning to get serious about that, I'd be interested in speaking with them.
Me too. Well, with an expert on the issue of the Uyghur concentration camps, and apparently that's on my show last Friday. Find that by way of truthjihad.com. Click on the radio link. And here we have news that your college sportswear may be manufactured.
This adds a whole nother dynamic to the question of slave labor, when it's actually not only slave labor, but also re-education, concentration camp labor. So this is another level to this. And I would point out that for the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement, that to further focus on this increasing relationship between Israel and China and technology, it might be a key piece of politically putting forth the problems of this kind of production.
Okay, well, Jeremy, I think we're at the end of our allotted hour, so let's go over the last stories quickly. The New World Order is here. People get fired for screwing up their pronouns with people of variable genders. Okay. Then we have an interesting New World Order article from the Tom Graham at Tom's Dispatch. John Pfeffer says the New World Order is here, but it's the opposite of what you New World Order conspiracy theorists think. I urge people to read this just because you're used to opposing viewpoints. We have the story about Stephen Curry back walking his arguments or his statements about the moon landing was fake. Obviously, this is a big topic that should be discussed and debated this year, the 50th anniversary of the moon landings coming up.
But by the way, just
having moon parties, serve some moony, moon-looking pizzas, and get people over to argue about the film American Moon, which presents both sides of the moon landing debate.
But by
and
the
finally,
way,
our last story, Jeremy,
wait,
you sent this
by
in.
The way, yeah, wait, by yeah. the way, on this story, what it actually they were concerned about, Scott Kelly, the astronaut, he said, the real thing is not that we're going to argue about the moon landing. Who cares? That's what he really said. What he said is the problem is that people are going to start believing things like 9/11 conspiracy theories or things about vaccines or global warming. But 9/11, again, is the key. So really, celebrities and sports players, they should focus on 9/11 because the facts are way out in the open and they are very damning and they're incredibly relevant to life and death immediately right now.
And that's why it's worth talking about the moon landing and taking advantage of the 50th anniversary, is because once people see that there is an issue there, then they'll be willing to think about other issues. But what about this issue of Saturn and its rings disappearing? You know, there's a discussion of Saturn supposedly being worshipped by us. That's one of the more extreme New World Order conspiracy theories that may or may not have some validity. But now Saturn is losing its rings. Shaitan's losing. What's that about, Jeremy?
Yes, I think this is interesting. They're saying that Saturn, which is referred to in many ways as part of the Saturnalia cult, the cult of authoritarianism, and Saturn, in terms of astrological significance or metaphorical significance, is about the idea of order and discipline, a very important principle. But then there are those that worship the authoritarian aspect that I believe is very much related to what we might call Satanism in some way. And so it looks like these rings that Saturn has had are very actually recent, more like a few hundred millions of years rather than billions of years, and are going away in a similar type of time scale. And so my contention is that metaphorically this means that Shaitan is losing his clothes as an emperor. And I would just leave it on the rapper Razzkaz. I remember an album of his that he put out while I was in college, and in this The Nature of the Threat, I think it was called, and he talked about Saturnalia, where Greek men would get drunk, F each other, and beat their wives. So I'm hoping this means an exposure of those kind of forces in our world, and a turn maybe more towards the face of God.
Sounds like a plan to me, Jeremy. I'm Saturnalias, but if it takes that many millions of years to disrobe the Shaitan and expose the Shaitan for what he is, and I don't know, I think we try to have to do it a little faster than that. But yeah. Hey, we hit the end of the show. Thank you, Jeremy, for holding things down while my internet service has been screwed up, and thank you to the rest of our False Flag Weekly News team. It's been great. Thank you to all of our supporters and subscribers. It's so much appreciated. We'll be back next week. I'm going to work on making sure I have internet. Until then, God bless you. Have a great week. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all that stuff. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alaikum salam.